All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers, what the fuck buddies, what the fucksters, what's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast, WTF. Welcome to it. How's it going? What's happening? Everybody okay? You hanging in? You doing the thing? Joe Walsh is on the show today. Joe fucking Walsh, right? Joe Walsh, James Gang, Joe Walsh, Joe Walsh, solo Joe Walsh, Joe Walsh, Eagles, Joe Walsh, fucking Joe Walsh, great American guitar player, folks. I was excited to talk to him, and I think it went pretty well. He's a deeply sober man, and he's been around a long time, and I've heard some stories about him, and I remember him from back in the day. Back in, he used to show up at the Comedy Store in the 80s. I tell him a story. I saw him. He used to, before he got sober, he looked like a ghost, man. Just this long, sort of like horrible blonde hair that just looks just beat. Like not from swimming, but from drugs. Just like a shadow of a dude. I just remember he just, like, he walked up an entire tray of Greyhounds to Sam Kennison on stage. Either he sent it up or he walked it up. I don't know if he would have had the energy to walk it up, but I remember him being around and not looking great, folks. But he looks good now. He's solid. He's healthy. And he's drinking Diet Coke. So that's happening. Joe Walsh is happening. Do you remember your first Joe Walsh records? Maybe you don't. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe this is a unique thing to me, because how did I, you know, I was thinking about him. And I'm right now I'm thinking about it. Like, what got me the records? Here's what I'm trying to remember, folks. Rocky Mountain Way was the song when I was in junior high school. It was around. It was already, you know, in the pantheon of great hard rock songs from the 70s. And it was in, you know, constant rotation. Spent the last year Rocky Mountain Way. The live version of it was really the one you heard a lot. This is pre-Eagles Joe Walsh. And I was trying to think, you know, what did that song make me do? I know this sounds weird, but some of you my age remember the Columbia Record Club, all right? The Columbia Record Club, I believe is what it was, where you'd get like 10 to 12 albums or cassettes for like a dollar or something. But then you were in. Then, you know, you're going to be sent the record of the month every month. You're going to get these, you know, and usually, you know, you took your parents' credit card number or you got some, you know, cash somehow. You got them to throw for it, you know, get those 12, I believe it was 12, you know, before CDs, cassettes or records. And that's where I track it. That's where I track it back to. Because that's where I got, and I believe the album was You Can't Argue With a Sick Mind. It had a mirror ball on it, and it had Rocky Mountain Way on it, had Walk Away, which I think was a James Gang tune. The rest of it I didn't give a shit about. It was all about Rocky Mountain Way, really. So I remember ordering it. It was one of the cassettes, one of the 12. What I was trying to do was remember the 12. And I must have been in junior high, man. Somewhere in there, that's when I got that Columbia Record Club package. I was just trying to remember what those fucking cassettes were. And I know it was that Live Joe Walsh. I know it was Aerosmith's first album. I know it may have been Aerosmith's Toys in the Attic as well. ELO's Greatest Hits. Probably for just their version of Roll Over Beethoven, because I didn't care for ELO that much. I believe Skynyrd's Second Helping. And I think maybe The Smoker You Drink, The Player You Get, the non-live version of Rocky Mountain Way. And then there was five other ones that I wish I could fucking remember. I feel like there was a Paul Simon in there. I just remember looking through that catalog and that day that shit came, it was so exciting. But then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, a month later, you get another record and you're like, I didn't ask for this record. Oh, that's the record of the month that you pay for because of your deal. Now you got, you know, you're into us for a dozen records, fucker. And we're going to get them. Unless you, you know, tell your parents that you were underage and get them to write a letter or have an attorney friend write a letter. You know, I was 14, 13 years old. I think that's how I got out of it. I wonder how often that happened. Yeah, just having the folks call. My son, was suckered by your... I think that's how it happened. I wouldn't call that cowardly. I was just sort of like, what do you want me to do? You got to pay for these records. I don't even want these records. The ones that came, the record of the month, not always the... Not the ones... They were not based on an algorithm back then. They were just sort of like, here you go. Here's your Andy Gibb record. Enjoy. Shadow dancing. Yeah, that's in there. That's in the catalog somehow. Just AM radio, right? AM radio, 7th, 8th grade, before I got baptized in FM, laid back KRST in Albuquerque. The Crest. Welcome to The Crest. Coming up now, we're going to do the entire side two of Jesse Colin Young's... Yeah, that was a Jesse Colin Young record. Do you know that record? How about, okay, we're going to play side one of Dan Fogelberg's. Yeah, those, I know, they sound similar, the Fogelberg and Jesse Colin Young records. As I said, Joe Walsh is coming. Joe Walsh is on the way. But I wanted to share with you something that I did. I did a recording session. Don't get crazy. I know a lot of you expecting the double album. Then after that, maybe the double live album of me just noodling by myself on stage in an arena. that image just made me incredibly nervous. As you know, I did this movie with Lynn Shelton called Sword of Trust. Now, in that movie, it's an improvised movie with Michaela Watkins, Toby Huss, John Bass, Jillian Bell. It's going to be good. Lynn Locked Picture, I have nothing to do with that part. But she did use and integrate some of the guitar stuff I do at the end of the show, which she was using as placeholders, I think, initially, and then she decided it sort of fit into it, to the movie, and she had Brendan, my producer, Brendan McDonald, send her a bunch of those. There are hundreds of them, of me just sitting here noodling by myself. And that became sort of the fabric of the soundtrack. And at the end, over the credits, under the credits, I should say, she wanted to have a song. Something like Who Do You Love, but the John Hammond version of it. So, you know, we're going back into late 60s, maybe very early 70s, that tone. Standard Louisiana jump groove. But, you know, we didn't know how much the song would cost or what it would take to license it. So I created with Tal Wilkenfeld, and you music nerds know who she is, but she's a comedy fan. I've played with her at these comedy jam things, and I've seen her at the club, the Comedy Store, hanging out, watching comedy. I didn't really know. I think when she first introduced herself to me, Tal Wilkenfeld, she's like, yeah, I sing, I play bass. And I was probably dismissive, as I was with Tiffany Haddish, who I didn't know when she said she wanted to do the podcast. She said she would come. Anyway, so Tal. So I just work with her, and I know Lynn wanted to do this. So I said, look, I'll reach out to Tal. I kind of know her, and you know she's the real deal, and maybe we'll try to, you know, get something together and record something for that, you know, an original piece for that last bit. So we did. So I talked to Tal and her and I, you know, put together an arrangement. I didn't know the whole process. So, you know, I met her at her house, at her home studio, and we laid out, you know, a thing with changes. We got the form, she called it. We made some demos, okayed them with Lynn, and then she was going to set up a studio session with her people. And, you know, I thought like, well, this is a lot bigger than we thought, but Lynn's like, let's do it. You know, we got some money, let's do it. So we end up going to a fucking studio after we made the demos. It turns out it's fucking, well, first of all, like Tal Wilkenfeld is this, she's like a prodigy. She's like a 31-year-old bass genius from Sydney, Australia, Jewish Australian woman. But she's like this wizard on bass. I mean, she's fucking played with Jeff Beck. She tours with Jeff Beck. Recorded with Herbie Hancock, Macy Gray, Jackson Brown, Lee Rentenauer, Ryan Adams, Todd Rundgren. I mean, she's a bass wizard. And she's also a production wizard, and she's a solo artist as well. She's like not only the real deal, she's like, you know, gifted. So we go to the studio, right? And she, like, and as we're leading into it, I'm sort of like, you know, why don't you get another guitar player to do this? I mean, you know all these people. And she's like, no, it's going to be great. You're going to do it. And I'm like, okay. But then we get, you know, the day before, she's like, I think I'm going to call my friend Doyle Bramhall. Maybe he'll come down and you know, just listen, because I'm going to need a set of ears while I'm playing. And I'm like, why don't you just have Doyle play? He's like a fucking wizard. Plays with Clapton and fucking, I mean, just, you know. But she's like, no, it's going to be great. You'll do it. I'm like, oh, my God. And then she's like talking about, like, you know, maybe Ben Montench will come down and do some organ. I'm like, what? I just get, just, you know, you guys just do it. I don't need to be there. She's like, no, you're going to be great. So anyways, we're doing it. And we, you know, she pulled together this group. She's got this drummer, Tamir Barzolay, who plays with her in her touring band. And apparently they were playing together when they opened for The Who just last year. So she brought in this piano player, this guy, Zach Ray, who's like Death Cab's piano player. He's also played on like Leonard Cohen records and, you know, on Ringo records, Nora Jones, like it's just wizards. And then this harmonica dude named Jimmy Z, he was there fucking in the studio, Jackson Brown studio, where Dylan recorded. And we were there all fucking day. Everyone's fucking killing it, geniuses. And just the layers, and then going in once you got the take you want, and then working within that one. I don't know. I get it now. I understand the sort of like what it takes to make the magic that finally makes it into your head on a recording, but also the sort of weird timelessness of doing that work, laying down the track, you know, chipping away at it, doing leads, doing, you know, pickup pieces, and like, it was pretty fucking amazing, pretty fun. And I'm excited for you to hear it. And I believe I co-wrote the piece with Tal. I imagine we'll have, you know, once Lynn releases the movie, after that, I imagine I can play it for you. I will play you the cut, which I believe is now called New Boots. So look forward to hearing New Boots here sometime, you know, next year, I guess. But what an amazing experience. That's all I'm saying. Joe Walsh is here. He's currently on the Eagles 2018 North American Tour now through the end of the year. He's also doing his second annual Vets Aid Benefit Show on Veterans Day, November 11th at the Tacoma Dome in Washington State. Don Henley, James Taylor, Chris Stapleton, and Chaim will be doing full sets along with Joe. That should go to that if you can. All right, so this is me chipping away at legendary guitar player Joe.
Every now and then, there's a decision that's a no-brainer, and I can tell you from experience, it was a no-brainer to use Stamps.com when we started using it 11 years ago. Crazy. 11 years ago.
Now, more than a decade later, Stamps.com is better than ever. The Stamps.com mobile app is like having a post office in your pocket wherever you are. You can take care of things on the go, like mailing checks, sending invoices, legal documents, and more. Easily schedule package pickups through your Stamps.com dashboard. And when you need to take care of shipping, all you need is a computer and printer. Stamps.com even sends you a free scale. Make the same no-brainer decision that over 1 million other businesses have with Stamps.com. Sign up with the promo code WTF for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the page, and enter code WTF.
Walsh.
What are you drinking, Diet Cokes? That's the thing?
Yeah.
I like Diet Cokes.
Do you?
Yeah, they help.
Yeah.
Yeah, you kind of do.
It's funny. I think I met you once before, and you would never know where. Years ago, I was a doorman at the Comedy Store when I was 22 years old, and you were sort of like an apparition, a kind of a ghost-like presence that would come in.
A phantom.
Yeah, a phantom. And you, I remember one time you sent Kennison up an entire tray of Greyhounds. Like it just the waitress had this, she had about 20 drinks on it, and you're like, yep, that was back then.
Yeah,
you remember that shit?
Oh yeah. Yeah, I do. Sam was what a good guy.
You spent some time?
Oh, yeah.
A lot of hours looking into each other's eyes, talking?
Yeah.
Yeah, that kind of stuff.
Figuring out the universe.
Yeah, he was good at that.
Yeah.
And it mostly revolved around him, which was a...
It did, didn't it?
Which was a lucky coincidence for him.
That
if he just talked about himself, it just kind of spread out from there.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. I just those days are kind of a haze for me. But I remember it pretty good.
How you long? Were 21?
22, 21.
22.
Yeah, and I was a doorman. I was hanging out with him.
Were you doing improv?
I was doing stand-up. I still do stand-up.
Yeah.
But I was doing a lot of coke. That was the graduate work I was doing. A lot of blow.
Yeah.
Up at the house.
You majored in that.
Yeah. It's my second major.
Yeah. I know it well.
Yeah. But you've been sober a while, right?
25.
25. Better, right?
It's better.
Yeah. I'm coming up on 19. Yeah, man. I mean, it's like I think about, because I was listening, what was I listening to today? The Confessor. And I remember the first time I heard that, I thought, man, Joe's got to be way underwater on this one. I mean, where were you when that song, I was like, this is what bottom looks like. Was it?
Yeah, and Stevie Nicks helped me a lot with that album.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
How so?
Well, we buddied up
for
about a year.
Yeah.
She had some solo album hits.
Yeah, right, yeah.
And toured.
Yeah.
And I opened for her.
Uh-huh.
And in the process of that, we just ended up hanging out together more and more.
Right. You guys were dating for a long time.
Yeah.
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 But like when you do something, she's not on that record though, right?
No, she's not on it, but she helped me write it.
Yeah, put it, process
and
it.
Confessor was a lot of her, and you know, mostly encouragement.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because, well, she's got a mystical bent to her, right? So you got that element?
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, she's a good witch.
Yeah, good witch.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's weird when you meet the bad ones, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
In Hollywood, there's no shortage of the bad witches, especially back then. The 80s seemed to be very full of bad witches.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you just couldn't, you think they're good at first.
Well, yeah, it's kind of like, you know, in the worst case scenario is that you marry one.
Yeah.
And then you find out.
So do you remember, like, where'd you grow up?
Oh, boy. Okay, I was born in Kansas.
Yeah.
I spent some time in Chicago, Illinois.
Yeah.
My family moved to Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah.
Spent about 3 years there.
Yeah.
We went to New York City.
Why all the traveling?
My father was in the legal end of insurance.
Uh-huh.
Professional insurance, like malpractice insurance for doctors and stuff.
Yeah.
So Chicago was Continental Casualty.
Yeah.
He got a promotion to Nationwide.
Yeah.
That's Columbus.
Right.
And then we went to New York City, an independent firm.
Uh-huh.
Picked him up.
And then he ended up back in Ohio?
And went to junior high school in New York City. That was a hoot.
Yeah.
And then high school in Montclair, New Jersey.
Montclair?
Yeah.
So you really, you know, you're sort of a Midwest guy, but you end up in Jersey.
Where did I grow up?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not done yet.
Yeah.
And then I got accepted at Kent State Ohio.
Yeah, right.
So I went back there in 1965.
Oh, right before the badness.
And I left at the end of 1970, pretty much because of the shooting.
So you were on campus when that happened?
Yeah, I was right there.
I talked to Mark Mothersbaugh.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was there too.
Oh, yeah.
Did you know him?
Yeah.
Back then?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You were in sort of the same circles?
There was the fraternity guys.
Yeah, right. And you weren't
there. And then, then there was us.
Right. The sides were drawn.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I can't even imagine what it was like to have been there for that. I mean, it sounded
No,
like
you it, can't.
It's just chaos.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
it was a perfect storm.
Mm-hmm.
of total dysfunction authority.
Yeah.
Not knowing what they were doing.
Yeah.
None of them. Versus a very naive, innocent student body.
Yeah. And did you know any of the people that were killed?
Yeah.
Really?
Jeffrey and Allison.
Yeah. Holy shit. So, like, at that point, you know, what did you feel, a call to arms, or you just wanted to get the fuck out?
Well, Kent died.
Yeah.
Kent was a great place.
Yeah.
It was like Austin.
Yeah.
Texas is.
Yeah.
It was like Seattle when the grunge
right,
hit.
Sure, yeah.
It was like San Francisco.
Right, yeah.
Before that mutated.
Yeah.
It was just this little island of us.
Yeah, yeah. Creativity.
Kids yeah. who got accepted at college
yeah.
and were going to college and didn't really know what that was.
Right. But this seemed like there was a lot of creative people there, too. Like, it was kind of...
Yeah.
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 And Kent was great because it was the second biggest school in yeah. Ohio, which was 20,000 people.
Right, yeah.
And five bars downtown.
Yeah.
And on any given night, you could go downtown and hear a band.
Yeah.
And because of the college... Kent was the place.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's where the girls were.
Sure, yeah.
So bikers would come up from Youngstown, and people would come up from all of Ohio and down from Cleveland. And
right.
Weekends, and, it was crazy when school was in.
Right. So, like, so in the 60s, were just starting to happen. So
yeah.
it was like, you know, the kind of like the big change culturally was starting to happen.
Yeah.
People were doing wild shit.
Yeah.
Out in public.
So, and I remember when LSD was legal.
Yeah, before anyone knew better.
Yeah, and at any given time, probably 15% of the student body was on acid, you know?
Yeah.
And we were good to go.
Yeah.
And I got in a band and which played downtown, and then school was out.
Yeah.
And I stayed.
Yeah, which band was that?
Do I have to tell you?
Sure.
The Measles.
Yeah, the Measles?
Yeah.
Wait, and how long have you been playing up to that point? When did you start playing the guitar?
High school.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And did you guys, you were pretty serious about it, the Measles?
Well, yeah.
yeah.
Yeah. And we learned cover songs.
Yeah.
And that was all you needed to know.
Yeah.
But when school was out.
Yeah.
The first summer,
mm-hmm.
I stayed and became a resident of Kent.
Yeah. After the shooting?
No.
Before?
No, no, no.
Yeah.
This is 1966.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
67.
So you were just living there. Yeah.
Well, it was still
yeah.
Kent.
Yeah.
Still, everybody came.
Yeah, yeah.
Even when school was out.
Yeah,
there just
yeah.
weren't any students.
Right.
And that's where I put in my 10,000 hours.
Playing?
Playing, you know. Three nights a week, four sets a night.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And that's when I was good.
Yeah. when it was still raw?
Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah. And so Kent was this place. Well, when the shooting happened, they closed the university because the FBI was investigating.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody went home and all of the places to play closed.
Yeah.
And the town people didn't like us anymore.
Right.
And Ohio didn't like us anymore.
Right.
Because Nixon represented us as dirty, hippie,
yeah.
communists who are a danger to America.
Right.
That's how he justified the shooting. We
yeah.
weren't. We right. were just kids.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Just doing what kids do.
Yeah, and so there was nothing there.
Yeah. Oh, it really just, it just felt
it
awful.
Dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, literally, Kent died.
Yeah.
And I was on a roll. I had gotten myself in the James Gang.
Yeah, great, great band.
And in...
That started in Ohio?
Yeah,
yeah
in
yeah.
Cleveland.
Yeah.
So I had worked my way up, and we word of mouth in the Midwest is we were bitching.
Yeah, yeah.
And we were.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, sadly, I left Kent.
Right. But you went to Cleveland?
Well, yeah.
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 And you did the first James Gang album?
That was out by then.
Yeah.
But we did the second one.
That was the big one, right? The second one?
Yeah. That's what Funk 49 was. And
yeah, that riff, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
James Gang Rides Again.
Yeah. So when you started playing, like, who were the guys that were, you know, that you kind of modeled yourself after? Who were the cats that you thought were great?
Oh, when I was really little, Les Paul.
Oh, you used to listen to those Les Paul and
Mary
Ford records.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. God, he can move around, right?
Oh, he, make well, it sound he wild. Invented a lot of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I played some stuff in orchestra, and that didn't work so good.
With what instrument?
Well, I ended up playing oboe.
Wow. Yeah, it's tight. That seems difficult.
Yeah. Yeah.
Limiting.
It was pretty cool, but yeah. Oboe players don't get a lot of girls. Yeah. I don't know if you knew that. They don't.
I assumed.
Yeah.
But the ones you got, they'd stay, you know.
Yeah.
If you're an oboe player.
Yeah.
You're locked in. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you two switched to guitar?
Well, I just found on my own that I could figure songs on the radio out.
On the guitar or the
oboe? On the guitar.
Yeah, yeah.
And I could also sing.
Yeah.
You can't sing if you play oboe.
No.
It doesn't work at all.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to take, you know, kind of back and forth a lot.
Yeah, so I at that point was figuring out all the stuff on the radio, and I grew up with all the 50s doo-wop,
yeah,
and all of that. That's that's my influence.
Yeah.
Is good old rock and roll, and here come the English guitar players.
Right.
Which was Beck and Clapton and
Peter Green.
Peter Green, yeah, big time.
Right.
Page.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I was pretty dumb.
Uh-huh.
Most, America was really dumb in the 50s.
Uh-huh.
It was wonderfully, wonderfully dumb.
Yeah.
You know?
Everything kind of
we knew everything we needed to know.
Yeah, and that was enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was plenty.
We didn't even know enough to respect the guys that the English blues players actually took into their hearts.
Well, they started talking about all these blues guys.
Yeah, yeah. And they were just down at South and and in Chicago. No idea.
That was never on the radio where I live.
Right. It took them to bring it back.
50s doo-wop was. Right.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
If it was blues, I would have learned it.
Yeah.
But, so I studied the English guys and gradually got into their influences.
Right. Go all the way back.
Yeah.
Like Freddie King, Albert King.
And the Three Kings.
Yeah.
Albert, Freddie, and
and then you got to work with BB, right?
I worked with them all.
So when you started touring with the James Gang, you'd done your time and you're doing your own riffs, but like you're meeting a lot of cats, right? Like you're on the road with a lot of guys. Like I guess because
I really started to meet people. We got really good in the Midwest. We were a big draw.
Yeah.
Our album, our first album, got really good reviews.
Yeah.
It didn't sell a lot.
Right.
But
people liked it.
Yeah, word of mouth.
Sure.
In the Midwest, we had a lot of people coming.
Yeah.
The headliners would come, and they would get us as an opening act.
Yeah.
Because we would make the show sell out.
Right.
We couldn't headline by ourselves.
Didn't have enough songs?
Weren't that big.
Right.
But
you could bring the locals in.
In the Midwest. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's how I met all the guys.
Yeah.
And I met Paige. We opened for the Cream.
Yeah.
In Detroit.
Like the first time
at
they were
the
over
Grandy
here?
At the Grandy Ballroom.
Oh, yeah? And then you got to meet Clapton?
He heard me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and I got to meet him briefly. And another one was we opened for The Who.
Yeah.
And Peter Townsend came early that night.
And he saw you.
He saw me.
And did they say anything that first time? Did you build a relationship with those guys?
That was the beginning of a long-term relationship.
With Pete?
Yeah. We bonded really well. Keith Moon decided he liked me.
Yeah.
That was the scariest thing that ever happened in my whole life. But they asked us to open for them in Europe.
Oh, really?
So for the Tommy Tour.
So James Gang was opening for The Who in Europe.
Yeah. So you see how I just started meeting people.
Right. Well, what was the relationship with Keith Moon? Why it's like it wasn't good because he took to you? Because you got to keep up with him, right?
Yeah.
It's pretty out of control.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if he liked you.
it's a battle to the death?
In 24 hours, we stayed up for a couple days.
Yeah.
Yeah. We stayed up for a week in 2 days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But at that time, though, like, weren't they, like, really the first band to really kind of be destructive off stage?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So and a lot of that was Keith.
But you were friends with him a long time, right? I mean, until the end, probably?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Did you play with that? You played on one of his records,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I did. I think it got reviewed as the worst album ever made.
Was it?
I'm pretty sure.
But was it fun making it?
Yeah.
So when you tour with The Who, like watching Townsend, and because he's like a rhythm-based guy too, really.
He taught me how to play lead and rhythm at the same time. That's his style.
Right.
Three-piece band.
Yeah. So you had to fill the
basically,
gap.
Basically.
Yeah.
We were a three-piece band. And there's a style, because you're the only melodic instrument, there's a style called lead rhythm.
Yeah.
And that's what Pete did.
Yeah.
And I picked up on that. I was figuring it out, but he was like the main guy.
Yeah.
For that.
Yeah.
And of course Paige.
Oh, you were friends with Jimmy too?
Yeah.
Still?
Yeah. We opened for Led Zeppelin.
Yeah.
In Cleveland.
Yeah.
Their first album had just come out.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And they were over in the States maybe 5 weeks too early because everybody came expecting to hear the Yardbirds.
Right.
Because that's how they knew Jimmy Page.
Right. But so they had no idea.
Jimmy Page's new band.
Yeah.
And the audience hadn't heard anything from the album.
Right.
So.
And it's a whole different sound, man, right?
Oh, yeah.
Holy shit.
And you... Nobody could grasp it. And they were just like figuring out how to play live.
Yeah.
You know?
That must have been insane. So like, how would the audience react?
Well, we got a really good, you know, Cleveland's hometown.
Sure.
So, you know, we just played to our people.
Yeah.
And they went crazy.
Yeah.
And I had met Jimmy. I worked my way backstage and met Jimmy at a Yardbird show. Uh-huh. I just went to hear the Yardbirds.
And when they were in Cleveland?
No.
Oh.
No, this was somewhere else. But he remembered me from that.
Yeah.
And we just kind of buddied up.
Yeah.
And, you know, he played a Fender Telecaster in the Yardbirds.
Right. And then he changed to Les Pauls at some point.
When you get into a three-piece band, you can't use a single coil guitar.
Right. Too thin.
Too thin.
Yeah.
You need...
power.
You need a Les Paul.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I had one.
Yeah.
And he realized that. He was in the process of realizing that a Telecaster ain't going to make it for Led Zeppelin.
Right.
And so he said, do you know any way I could get a Les Paul?
Weren't they available?
In England, they were non-existent.
Really? In the late 60s?
In England.
Yeah.
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 And in the States, they were around. they weren't expensive.
Yeah.
They were around. I mean, everybody was getting new stuff. Everybody was getting, like, what the Beatles played.
Rickenbackers.
Rickenbackers.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Country Gentlemen, Gretsch's.
Epiphone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so Les Paul was like, that was, you know, that came out in the late 50s.
And no one cared.
Nobody had really bothered to plug one in.
Yeah.
And I happened to have two because I found one from a guy in Akron and I found another one in a music store. You know, there was no guitar center or anything.
Yeah.
Just a family-owned local music store.
Yeah.
They had one in the basement.
Les Paul that no one wanted.
Yeah. It had been lying around since the 50s.
Yeah.
And so I had two of them.
Yeah.
And I gave Jimmy one of mine. And I said, well, I have two.
Yeah.
I'll keep the one I like. You can have this one and see how you like it.
Yeah. And that was it.
And that is the bulk of Led Zeppelin's work.
Right.
That guitar. He calls it number one.
That the one you gave him.
Yeah.
The magic guitar.
Yeah.
That's amazing. And that and you still play Les Pauls mostly or no?
It depends what the other guitar player is playing.
Uh-huh.
I have found that if the other guy's playing a Les Paul, you need to play a single coil.
Oh, okay.
A Strat.
Yeah. Just to balance it out, get the high end going.
You can hear both of them.
Right, right. As opposed to just a mess, a humbucking mess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when you start to, like, who else did you, like, where else did you pick up tricks? Because I did a little research on you, and it seems like just by virtue of touring with all these guys or opening for them, because who did I talk to? I talked to Billy Gibbons about opening for Hendrix in Texas.
Yeah.
Yeah, you guys must be friends, right? You and Billy?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
he married us.
Oh, he did?
My wife, Marjorie. Hi, Marjorie. I love you. Yeah, he married us.
He did?
Reverend Billy Gibbons. You bet.
But he talked about, it was funny, he shared this story with me where he said, you know, he was opening for Hendrix and they were back at the hotel and Hendrix would have a whole stereo console delivered to the hotel. And he said to Billy, he's like, let's go try and figure out what Jeff Beck is doing. And
yeah.
Like Jeff Beck was this towering guitar wizard that everybody was baffled by.
He still is.
Yeah.
Jeff has mutated to where he made the guitar into an instrument that is, yeah, he's playing the guitar, but that's not the instrument.
Yeah.
He figured out a way to make noises and a way to play, especially with the tremolo arm.
Yeah. And the knobs.
Like, and the knobs, yeah. And nobody can figure out what the hell he's doing. Never could.
Yeah.
And I met Jeff too, of course.
Yeah. So when do you, like, when did the life get large after those first two James Gang hits?
Well, life got large when I joined the Eagles.
Well, yeah.
I would say.
Right. But, like, when did you, like, when can you track, you know, because you write it, you know, a lot of songs about the rock and roll lifestyle, and certainly you're sort of mythic in that. But, like, because I guess in the late 60s, early 70s, it was just what everyone was doing. But at some point, you must have upped the game.
Yeah, there was a lot of people doing it.
Yeah.
The James Gang did really well.
Yeah.
The second album was in the top 100 for a year.
Yeah.
And the third album, Walk Away, was on that. But I started to get toasted.
Yeah.
I was hearing other singers than me. Two vocals.
Right.
I was hearing, like, keyboard parts.
Yeah.
I was hearing like a rhythm guitar player.
Yeah.
And when I say that, I mean, I was writing that kind of music.
Right. Bigger than a trio.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those songs were nice, but they weren't for the James Gang.
Right.
We couldn't go play those live. And I also thought I was kind of painting myself into the corner as a great, great grandfather of heavy metal. And I didn't want to do that.
You wanted to, you wanted to make more hits? Or what's the opposite of that?
I was starting to really write original material.
Yeah.
That's all we did.
Yeah. Just played.
It was play.
Yeah.
That was my whole life, you know?
It wasn't writing necessarily. It was just playing.
No, it was playing.
Yeah.
And going to the next show and driving.
Yeah. What'd you do in the car?
And setting my own stuff up.
Yeah, yeah.
What I do in the car?
Yeah.
Listen to the radio.
Right. No songwriting in the
or
car?
Or nothing.
You're in there with two other dudes, right? Just talking, at least?
Well, I drove the equipment truck.
Oh, okay. The other guys were in the car?
I lived in the equipment truck.
You did?
On top of the PA columns, yeah. was my bit. Yeah, for a couple months. Anyway, I decided that I was going to try something else.
Right.
Which is terrifying. and makes no sense, because when you're in a big group,
yeah, and you're working,
and you're working, and you're filling the house, why quit?
Yeah,
and if you it guys ain't broke, don't fix it.
And you guys are getting along.
Yeah,
yeah.
But I was just fried, man. Yeah. I was just fried, playing the same songs over and over and over and over and over.
Yeah, yeah.
And having to get a buzz to do it.
Right. Yeah. Now,
this was serious turn up.
Right. Right.
Marshall stacks and stuff.
Right. So when you decided to break away, you just told the other dudes? Like, how does that go?
I did.
Yeah.
I did. I said, I'm going to play out the existing shows, and I got to take a break, and I got to get out of Ohio.
Yeah.
And so I did.
Where'd you go?
I went to Colorado.
That's nice.
And I did that because Bill Simzik,
the producer?
With the name that nobody can spell.
I'm glad you said it before I brought him up.
Bill Simzik.
Yeah.
Yeah. No vowels.
Yeah.
Polish.
Uh-huh.
He found us in Ohio. He produced the first album.
Yeah.
He produced our second album. He produced the B.B. King song album that The Thrill Is Gone was on.
Yeah.
And that's how I met B.B.
Yeah. What'd you learn from B.B.? Anything?
I went to see him about 4 months before he died.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, he opened for me at a casino.
Uh-huh.
And so I went in and sat down, and we talked for a while because I'd known him since 69, something like that. And I asked him, what have you learned that you would pass on to me?
Yeah.
Because I'm going to keep going because you did. You showed us all how.
Right.
I'm going to keep going. What would you say? He said, Joe, get the money. Get your money.
That's it. Yeah.
I said, what? So that's what I learned from B.B. King. And he was a perfect gentleman. He was just a real gentleman.
So how long were you in Colorado? Is that where Rocky Mountain Way came from?
Bill Simzik quit the label.
Yeah. Which label?
ABC Dunhill.
Uh-huh. So he's freelance? He's just out in the world?
It was the earthquake. I think it was 1970-something.
He got out?
Yeah. He left the next day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's in Colorado.
Freaked him right out.
Yeah.
Yeah, he moved to Colorado and started a label.
Yeah.
And I said, I don't know where to go, but I'm going to wrap it up. And he said, well, come out to Colorado.
Yeah.
And so I did. And out of that came the Barnstorm concept, which was my solo group.
Yeah.
And it was good.
How many were you?
First, it was me and Joe Vitale, drummer.
Yeah.
Now, he's from Kent.
So you knew him from back in the day?
Yeah. But he was, when I said there's the fraternity guys?
Yeah.
He is one of them.
Yeah, a good one.
And so we didn't talk much.
Right. So how'd you get, you just called him up and said?
Yeah, I called him up and said, hey, I'm in Colorado and I don't know what I'm doing. What are you doing? He said, nothing.
Yeah.
You know how I'm doing. Kent's dead.
Yeah.
And so he came out. We made model airplanes for about 4 months.
Uh-huh.
Because it was too cold to go outside and get his drums out of the car.
Yeah.
That was awful. Yeah. I had no idea.
Yeah.
We lived in Nederland, above Boulder.
Uh-huh.
That's where Caribou Ranch was being built.
Yeah.
Which was James Garcio's studio. He was the producer of Chicago.
That's a big band.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Caribou Ranch became a famous studio, but
not when you were there.
No, they were still building it.
Yeah. So where'd you record?
At Caribou Ranch.
Oh, you waited. You built the model airplanes and...
Yeah, and we wrote some songs, and then we got a bass player, and we went and did that, and the first Barnstorm album got great reviews.
Yeah.
And we played some shows, and we were really good.
It's just three of you again?
No, there was four of us. There was a keyboard player.
And that's when you did Rocky Mountain Way, the smoker you drink, the player you get?
Well, the second Barnstorm album was just coming out, and Rocky Mountain Way was on it. And I wrote that about, I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I moved to Colorado.
Yeah.
And I'm starting to run out of money. And my first solo album flopped. And I'm scared.
Yeah.
And maybe I really screwed up.
Yeah.
And that's what the words kind of say.
Yeah.
And then I looked up and saw the snow on the back range.
Yeah.
And I said, wait a minute. That's better than the way we had.
Yeah,
which was
right.
Cleveland.
Right, right. Yeah. So that's the backstory.
So what happened then was Barnstorm, I was running out of money, and we were playing for, I don't know, $350 a night or something.
In like touring or just around Colorado in that Southwest?
Whatever.
Right.
Whatever we could get.
So you had no traction.
And the record company was really not too excited.
But those were those.
Except Rocky Mountain Way was on the Smoker You Drink, the Player You Get album.
It's a huge record, man.
And about the last show that Barnstorm was going to play was at the Roxy.
Here.
The Whiskey.
The Whiskey.
The Whiskey.
Yeah.
The Whiskey a Go-Go.
Yeah.
And this guy came up to me, little guy with a beard, and he said, I've been trying to find you, and I'm from the Midwest, and I'm an agent. I'm a booking agent, and you need some booking.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, I don't want to book, but I know how, but I want to be a manager.
Yeah.
And so why don't I manage you? And I had told him my affairs are a mess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well,
I don't know. I don't have any direction. I'm not selling records. It's not going the way I had hoped.
Yeah.
And he said, well, I tell you what, I'll manage you. We'll get your stuff all figured out. And you got to keep going.
Yeah.
And by the way, Rocky Mountain Way is a hit.
Yeah, that's what he said. Yeah.
And that was Irving Azoff.
Oh, wow.
And that was pretty much the last gig Barnstorm was going to play. So all of a sudden, I had a huge single.
Yeah.
And a new manager.
And he went on to become a huge manager.
Yeah, still is.
Yeah. Are you still with him?
Yeah.
Wow, that's wild. So yes, you were there at the beginning. Were you his first client?
Me and Danny Fogelberg.
Dan Fogelberg. Did he pass away or is he still
alive? Yeah, Danny died of prostate cancer.
Oh.
I don't know, 15 years ago.
Maybe. Yeah. Did you know Dan before that?
No, not before that. Yeah. But Irving made me produce Dan's album.
Souvenirs?
Souvenirs, yeah.
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 That was a big record.
Yeah.
And definitely different style than you know?
Yeah. Well,
real laid back.
Danny, I just couldn't believe the songs that this guy wrote. He's sitting there with an acoustic playing me these incredible songs. And Irving said, he needs to do an album. Why don't you do it?
Yeah.
And so I did.
And it was a big record.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And so.
That was the first time you produced, too?
Yeah.
So he helps you get Rocky Mountain Way on the charts, and that changed it. I mean, that song.
That changed everybody's attitude.
Changed the whole country's attitude. I remember hearing that song at least three times a day when I was a kid. In Albuquerque, New Mexico, driving around. And then the live version, that was a big record too.
Yeah.
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 And you figured it, he must have been the first one to use that voice box thing.
Yeah.
Where'd you find that?
I found that in Nashville. There was a country singer named Dottie West.
Yeah.
And she was one of the grand old girls of Nashville.
Yeah.
Old time. I think she was married to Porter Wagoner for a while.
Uh-huh.
And her husband was Bill West, and he was a pedal steel player, but he was also a mad inventor.
Yeah.
And he had invented the talk box, which basically, it's not a speaker, it's the back end of a speaker.
Right.
In a little cardboard box and a piece of surgical tubing stuck in it.
Yeah.
So the sound comes up the tube.
Right.
But yeah. You don't really hear it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Pete Drake is a legendary pedal steel player. He used it once.
Did he play with George Jones?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, he's so good, that guy.
But Pete Drake had a hit where his pedal steel talked. But then the thing went back in Bill West's garage.
Uh-huh.
And anytime the James Gang played Nashville, we'd go to Dottie's after the show. And she'd invite a bunch of friends over, and we'd all sit around and play guitar.
Yeah.
And Bill West went out, came in from the garage, and said, "Here, take this. I made this a long time ago. Here's how you do it. You know, maybe you can use it for something. I'm cleaning out my garage."
And you took it.
And that's Rocky Mountain Way, yeah.
And then, of course, someone manufactured it after.
Well, Peter Frampton called me up and said, "What the hell is that?" So I told him, and he got rich, too.
Yeah. With Frampton Comes Alive.
Yeah.
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 Do you feel like I do?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's such an odd a piece of equipment because you don't hear it. Besides you guys, you two, you and Frampton, I don't, who else did it?
Jeff Beck a little bit.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
So it's interesting because you can use your mouth and your throat as like this another riffing instrument, you know? Like,
yeah.
Yeah, and make a completely bizarro sound.
Yeah.
Do you still...
You know the people who have heavy smokers?
Yeah.
Who have no larynx. They had their larynx removed.
Tracheotomy?
And they have this buzzer
Sure, man.
That they put...
Yeah, yeah.
And it talks like this.
Yeah. It's basically that?
That's basically what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you sit here and talk to me,
yeah,
but just move your mouth,
right?
That's what you do,
right?
And you put this tube in your mouth,
and there you got it,
and that's your sound.
Yeah. Do you take it on the road with you?
Yeah.
I love that. That's where it came from. Just the Bill West, is that his name?
Bill West
in his garage.
He also invented the first fuzz tone.
Did he really?
Yeah, but he never got a patent on it.
Oh. So you missed a boat on that one.
Missed a boat on that one. Yeah.
So okay. So now you're with Azoff.
I'm with Azoff.
Produce souvenirs. Yeah. You got Rocky Mountain Way.
Rocky Mountain Way came out.
It's all happening.
And I got out of Colorado.
How long were you there?
3 years.
Yeah. So are you getting married? You churning through wives yet? Is that happening?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got married and had a kid. And actually, my wife at the time had a car accident taking my kid to school. Somebody ran a stop sign and wiped him out. My wife's alive, but my kid got wiped out. Oh. And so...
How old?
4.
Oh, sorry, man.
So that's a long time ago.
Yeah.
That was a great excuse to be mad at God.
Yeah.
And go on a 20-year trash myself.
Mm-hmm. That's where it started?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I was doing pretty good without that.
Yeah.
But, you know, and an album of mine called So What?
Right, yeah.
That was a reaction.
That could have been called Fuck You?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah.
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 How'd that album do?
Oh, it did great. Yeah. It did great. But right in there, right, I was in California more and more and made friends with the whole Southern California team.
Who's it like the...
Group, community. And this was a lot like Kent. This was in L.A.
Yeah.
There was tons of places to play.
Like J.D. Souther and those guys?
Yeah, lots of musicians. Yeah. And everybody had come to California.
Yeah.
Like... For example, me,
Men
Glenn and Henley, we knew that where we lived, which was Ohio, Colorado for me.
Yeah.
Glenn was in Detroit.
Yeah.
Henley was in Texas. Right. Linden, Texas.
Yeah, right.
We knew that we'd gone as far as we were going to go.
In those places.
In those places.
Yeah.
And we didn't know if we would ever make it, but if we were going to make it, yeah, it would be in Los Angeles.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah, everybody was here, and that was Laurel Canyon.
In the 70s.
Yeah.
So after the 60s. So yeah, it's not Crosby and those guys, it's your generation.
It's early, or 72, 73, 74.
So they were all still there too, right? The David Crosby.
Jackson Brown, yeah, you know.
Yeah. You were up in Laurel Canyon?
Me, I was a rocker, you know, yeah, but it was John and Glenn, and they were in Linda Ronstadt's band.
Yeah, yeah.
Linda was having hits.
Was Graham Parsons ever around?
Graham Parsons and the Burrito Brothers, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, all kinds of people.
Right.
All kinds of people.
So it felt like you're in a creative community again. You landed in the right place.
Yeah, and none of us had made it
yet. Yeah.
So if somebody played the Troubadour,
yeah,
everybody else would go yeah, and hang.
Right.
And then more often than not, we would kind of split off into groups and go sit up all night and play guitar for each other and help each other write songs and stuff.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
So like
well, out of that think tank, out of that community, a couple of the guys got focused.
Yeah.
And that was Don and Glenn.
Yeah.
And out of that came the Eagles.
But you're still doing solo at that point, right?
Yeah, but I had a big hit.
Yeah, so, with Rocky Mountain Way?
The Eagles opened for me.
Yeah.
And I opened for, like, Elton John.
Right, okay. Yeah, that was the pecking order.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I started hanging with them.
And you were also doing a lot of studio work, right?
Yeah. I was playing on people's records.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, a lot of people.
And that must be felt great. So you're, like, working, right?
Yeah.
You worked with a lot of guys. Like, I didn't realize you're... I just listened to Thunder Island the other day.
Oh, Jay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the weirdest thing, because I was, like, going through songs that for some reason, I felt guilty about liking when I was a kid.
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
And Thunder Island was one of them, and I listened to it, and it was like, it's good riff. Was that you on acoustic? What were you playing on that?
Slide.
Oh, you were Slide on that?
Yeah.
Where'd you fucking pick that up?
Duane Allman.
You opened for the Allman Brothers back
then? For the Allman Brothers.
For a while, or just one or two dates?
Oh, three or four dates over a summer.
That must have been something to watch.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
With Duane, yeah.
So you guys, so you're all doing it, but you're working, you're playing with Al Cooper, you know, you play...
Yeah, Big Al.
Yeah, and
I played for...
Z-Von.
Andy Gibb.
Wow. So you're in this mix.
Well...
You're watching Linda Ronstadt and the Eagles,
the
guys.
The Eagles, their guitar player, Bernie Ledden.
Yeah.
Was a purist, guitar purist.
Oh, right. I remember. I watched a doc, but it was like, like 9 hours long.
He only played acoustic.
Country.
That. Bluegrass.
Well, they were kind of doing the Burritos Brothers thing, right? They were purists, right? Yeah.
He played banjo and he played acoustic. And Don and Glenn wanted to go more towards rock and roll.
Mm-hmm.
They were worried about getting painted in the corner as a country rock band.
So they'd already done like, what, 4 or 5 records, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so Bernie said, you know what, I'm not getting off. I can't play rock and roll. You guys go ahead.
So who were they left with? Felder wasn't in the band yet, right?
Yeah, they had...
They had Felder?
They had Felder for about a year.
And when Bernie left?
Yeah.
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 So then...
Felder, and they went a little more rock and roll, and On the Border album.
That's a good one.
And Bernie looked at Felder and said... Felder's got it covered, you know.
You don't need me anymore?
I don't want to do this.
Is he still around, that guy?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. And Irving said, what if we get Walsh?
Yeah. What's he
up to? And Glenn said, yeah. And Don said, no.
What was Don's problem?
No.
Why didn't he want you?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what his problem was, but, you know.
So you'd already made,
I knew them all, yeah.
Yeah, you'd made So What already or not yet?
Yeah.
So that was out.
Yeah.
And that had a hit on it, didn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So now what happens?
Shortly before that was when my wife had the accident in Boulder, Colorado.
Like in 73 or something?
Four.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you were pretty fucked up, bad shape.
Yeah, and I got out of Boulder.
Right.
We our marriage didn't stand a chance.
Yeah, so that's a lot of strain.
Yeah, so I just like went to L.A. because I didn't know what else to do.
Yeah.
And I didn't feel that I had the strength to continue a solo career.
Yeah.
With getting over what I had to get over.
Yeah.
So when I was asked to join a band, you know, it was great. James Gang was great. I got in my own band. I was the leader. I found out that the leader has to sing everything, has to decide everything, has to tell the other people what to play. Yeah. I didn't do that in the James Gang.
Right.
I didn't care what they played.
Right.
And in terms of writing, if you have to write everything, it gets lonely.
Yeah.
You know, there's nobody to bounce stuff off, nobody to...
And also you're using a lot.
Yeah.
So you're going down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I was happy to get in a band.
So what turned Henley around?
He wasn't totally against it.
Oh.
I was crazy.
Oh, yeah.
And
they didn't want him to deal with it.
Yeah, he didn't want me to bring in that.
Yeah. So when you guys all hung out and stuff, you were the guy who was out of control and fucking wild. And it's
funny.
Yeah, Walsh is here.
And nobody got hurt.
Yeah. Just was, coked up and clowning.
Well, Keith Moon was a bad influence.
He taught me
how to do it all. Here's how you glue shit.
Glue shit?
Yeah, here's how you super glue somebody in their room. They won't get out for 2 days.
All the important skills.
Yeah.
This is how you throw a television off.
Yeah.
Of. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you were full-on drugged up prankster.
Yeah.
And Henley was like, fuck this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know about that.
Yeah.
I don't know that this is really intellectually sound thinking.
Yeah. Doesn't seem like a responsible fella, this Walsh guy.
Yeah. So we decided we'd try it.
Yeah.
And so I learned all of Bernie's parts.
Yeah.
And we rehearsed for, I don't know, a month.
Yeah.
And then we went to Japan and played the Eagles catalog up to On the Border.
So many fucking hits, right?
But we had Funk 49.
From you, yeah.
And Rocky Mountain Way.
Yeah.
I mean, I was the closer.
And walk away, right?
Yeah. You know, in baseball, they bring a guy in.
Yeah.
In the ninth.
Yeah.
He's got to get three people out.
Yeah.
That's what I was for the Eagles.
On the encore?
At the end of the show to get an encore.
Oh, you'd wait.
They can almost get an encore, but...
Yeah.
They had, you know...
They all kind of went at the same tempo. So you had to like, put it over the top.
Yeah, it over the top.
Right, man. Yeah,
and that's what made the most sense, especially to Irving.
Yeah.
And Irving said, John, it doesn't really matter if you like him or not.
Yeah.
You want to do encores?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So we went to Japan, and... It worked. The chemistry worked. Because I settled down. I did what I was supposed to do. I was happy to be in a band. I love those guys. Their harmony.
Yeah.
It's a dream
to
have vocals like that and be a guitar player.
Yeah.
And play to that.
It's nice.
And Felder and I got along good. In the meantime, we didn't really play in the States that much. We went to Japan to try it out.
Yeah.
And we went to Australia. But we got Bill Simczyk.
Yeah, your old producer friend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we did what became Hotel California in the studio.
Yeah. Took a while to put it together,
and
huh?
It was just like Kent. We were a real band, man.
Yeah.
We played all together in the same room.
On a lot of tracks?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we'd put the vocals on. Don and Glenn would write the words. They put that on, and then Felder and I would put on guitar parts. And that was it.
Felder must have upped your game a little. I mean, he seemed like
we were great together.
Yeah, man. I mean, obviously, that Hotel California is like, that's the one, man.
Yeah. And so Hotel California came out, and there was no turning back.
So
here we go.
Yeah, huge record. And I saw you in the documentary talking about that riff on Life in the Fast Lane. That was just some practicing you used to do? Just fucking around?
Yeah, that was a warm-up exercise to get your right hand and your left hand talking.
Yeah, that you came up with?
I would warm up with that.
It's such a great riff.
And Don and Glenn came in and said, what the hell is that? And I said, I don't know. And Glenn said, that's an Eagles song.
Yeah. So how long did it take you to put together that record? Hotel California.
A year.
Yeah? Is that about the average time?
No.
Longer or less? Should do it less.
The long run took 2.5 years, but we toured
right
while we were making it.
So once Hotel California came out, I mean, that changed everything, right? Then you toured the States. You're the biggest band in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you just stuck with it through thick and thin.
Yeah.
So when does sobriety hit you, man? What happened?
I was in really, really bad shape.
Well, when I saw you at the Comedy Store, you were like very thin, and then your hair was all fried. And
yeah.
Yeah, you look like a ghost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was able to play rock and roll.
Right.
Pretty effectively.
Uh-huh.
For a long time.
Fucked up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In retrospect, most of the audience was fucked up.
Yeah.
And a good 50% of the musicians weren't that far behind me.
Right.
And 15% of them were ahead of me.
Yeah.
In terms of getting trashed.
But you were seeing guys drop, I imagine.
Yeah. I had buddies who didn't make it.
Yeah.
They OD'd first.
Mm-hmm.
They OD'd before they hit bottom.
Yeah, right.
And what happened to me was I hit bottom before I OD'd.
Yeah.
And it was pretty close.
Do you remember like where you were and what happened?
I was in New Zealand.
That's in that pretty place.
Yeah.
Yeah. You were just hanging out?
And I was at a place called Hawke's Bay.
Yeah.
Which was the Maori capital 3,000 years ago. And there's an old fort there where about, I don't know, 4,000 people had lived. And this is the ruins of it, but it is, for the Maoris, that's a holy place.
Yeah.
And I had gone to New Zealand and produced a band called the Herbs, H-E-R-B-S.
Reggae band?
New Zealand, reggae is weird. New Zealand is Polynesia.
Uh-huh.
It was Polynesia. It's like reggae.
Yeah.
But it's not the Jamaica, man.
Yeah.
It's you know.
Different.
Yeah.
A little Polynesian flavor to it somehow? Is it a different rhythm or I can't?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And they were the biggest band in New Zealand, so I made an album for them, and so I got accepted into the Maori community.
Huh.
And
so these were Maori guys?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway, they took me up to the fort, and I looked out and felt a lot of mojo from where I was, and had a moment of clarity, shall we say.
Yeah, I know the phrase. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was, you're going to have to do something about this.
Yeah.
And it wasn't too long after that. I thought I would go in, do laundry, get some sleep, gain a little weight, get people off my back.
That part.
Yeah, and then go out and pretend that I was only going to drink beer.
Yeah.
But I realized about a week into rehab that I can't say my life got better, but it stopped getting worse.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was huge. Yeah, you know, I'll take it.
And you're eating.
Yeah. So I stuck around.
Yeah.
And I was done.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier when you're done.
Yeah.
And I saw in me, my health and my behavior, everything that my buddies who flamed out were doing.
Yeah.
And
right.
I knew it was inevitable.
You're gonna die.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I didn't wanna.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't wanna. So I decided that I would go in and get sober.
Yeah.
Eagles, in the meantime, had broken up for 14 years, I think.
So that was good timing for you, I guess.
Well, Don and Glenn came to me out of a blue sky, a clear blue sky, and said, we're thinking about getting the Eagles together. We can't do it without you, and we can't do it unless you're sober. Do you think you could get sober? And I said, I don't fucking know. I'm pretty sure I can.
Yeah.
And this is the best reason I can think of.
That not dying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're going to get the Eagles back together.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'll go in.
That was the incentive too. Yeah.
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 That was it.
Oh, yeah.
Between my moment of clarity.
Yeah.
And then when they did that.
And then at that point, like when you first get sober, as I remember, like, so there's no coincidences. You're like, you had the clarity. Don and Glenn show up. You're like, duh.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's time to do this.
Yeah.
Right?
Duh. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And so in early sobriety, I became an outpatient. I was going to go in for a week and I stayed, 5 weeks.
Sure.
And inked it in.
Yeah.
And then we started rehearsals for Hell Freezes Over.
How was that for you?
Really hard.
Yeah.
Really hard to play sober.
I bet. After what, 20, 30 years?
Really hard to do, yeah.
Oof.
Really hard to do anything sober.
Right. Because you're self-conscious, right?
Yeah. Right. Terrified.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I drank in the first place.
Yeah.
Terrified to get up in front of people.
Yeah. So what helped you out?
I just stuck to the program.
Yeah.
I mean, I bumped into these guys at men's meetings.
Yeah.
Guys older than me who had been sober 30 and 40 years.
Yeah.
And I liked them.
Yeah. Yeah.
They made sense.
Yeah.
And they had been where I was.
Yeah.
And
makes it seem possible.
Yeah. And I realized, I'm not unique.
Yeah.
And different.
Yeah.
And one of a kind.
Yeah.
Like I always have thought I was.
Right. You're the special user.
There's me, yeah. And then there's everybody else.
Yeah.
No, I'm an alcoholic.
Right.
And I thought, geez.
It's a relief knowing who you are.
Yeah. I get it.
Yeah.
I'm an alcoholic.
Yeah.
And these guys, I can tell them my worst nightmarish secrets.
Yeah.
They can top it.
Yeah.
And somebody knows what to do.
Yeah, right, right.
So somebody knew what to do about, I'm terrified, what do I do?
Yeah. And you got in the present and you dealt with it.
Yeah.
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 And Hell Freezes Over came out and here we go.
Yeah. A couple of big hits, back out on the road.
Yeah.
So
and here I am.
Yeah, and you're going again.
Yeah.
So this is the first tour in a while?
First tour after Glenn passed.
That's right.
We...
That was sad, huh? Wow.
Yeah.
Sorry, buddy.
We thought he had more time than that.
Yeah.
It was a perfect storm of a couple things. When you go in the hospital and you get an infection or you get pneumonia, I don't know exactly what happened, but that wasn't supposed to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. We thought that was it. I mean, Henley said, that's it. There's no way in hell we can ever, we can keep going.
Yeah.
And that's the way it was. And we were all sad for a long time, for a year. And Irving and Don and I kind of agreed, you know, we got to at least try. Maybe we'll suck, and then we'll know.
Yeah.
But we got to at least try.
And how are you, obviously he's irreplaceable, but how are you, how are they divvying up the songs? Who'd you bring in?
We got Glenn's son,
yeah.
Deacon, who's really good, 25. He doesn't have a clue what's going on.
Uh-huh.
And it's great. It's great standing next to him.
And he's singing his dad's parts?
He's singing his dad's parts.
Does he sound like him?
Enough. Looks like him. Sounds like him.
Yeah.
But he's Deacon. I mean, he's doing it his way. But, yeah. I mean, that, to me, makes it spiritually okay.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's almost like the next generation is the next step. It's an evolution. It's respectful. It's not like, you know.
Yeah.
It's not like Journey.
I mean, we couldn't just audition people that sound like Glenn.
That would be weird.
That wouldn't work.
And the fans.
Glenn was a lot more than that.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
And we asked Vince Gill to come and play.
He's in on the tour?
Yeah.
No shit?
He's in the band now.
Holy fuck.
So we got Deacon Frey and Vince Gill. We rehearsed. Vince had wanted to be in the Eagles since he was 11. So now he is.
That must be a whole other and now you're playing with Vince.
Yeah.
He's a fucking monster on that guitar.
Yeah.
Jeez.
And he's the vocal part of backgrounds and harmonies.
He's real good at it.
That we needed.
Yeah. Well, that's a hell of a band, man.
So we had to at least try.
Yeah.
And we did. Last year we played, I think, 4 shows.
Oh, he did the big thing with Fleetwood Mac and all them, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and
it worked.
Yeah.
And so then we decided we were going to tour, and so far it's been great.
Great, man. And you know, everyone's getting along, and
yeah,
that's great.
And Don's happy.
How often does that happen?
Well, I spent the first 3 years of being in the Eagles just trying to figure out if he liked me or not. And then I realized, yeah, he likes me.
He's just hard on himself.
It's the way he is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's like, you, and now do you find that, I mean, this maybe it's an offbeat question. I mean, it doesn't seem like you guys need the bread. You like doing it, right?
We're doing it.
Yeah.
Well, it was a bitch after Glenn passed.
Yeah.
We all dealt with it this way and that way.
Yeah.
But we had to at least try.
Yeah.
Because, boy, you know, we broke up a lot of times for a couple weeks.
Right.
And then everybody said, geez, do you miss playing? Yeah.
You love playing?
What were we mad about? Well, I don't know. Okay. Let's go play.
And you love playing.
Yeah. I love playing. I don't know what else I would do. And neither does Don.
Yeah. And do you find that, like, now that you've got all that sobriety, I mean, what is the primary difference between playing as sober as you are now and playing, you know, as good as you were, you know, high?
Yeah. Yeah.
What's the difference?
I learned how to do it.
But does it feel different? I mean, do you appreciate it more? Do you get off on it more?
Well, in terms of self-esteem, I can do it not drunk.
Right.
I never thought that I could do it.
Yeah.
I mean, how can you be crazy, rock and roll, and do it sober?
Yeah.
I never thought I'd be funny again.
Yeah.
I thought I was, you know, I didn't know what sober was. I thought I was going to just have a job and wear a tie. You know,
why
come home and read the paper.
Yeah, you thought that was what's going to happen?
Yeah.
But when you play, like you said before, like, you know, you got to the point when you were using that, you could, you know, like, it's almost like you service the using. Like, you could get away with playing and be as fucked up as you were.
Yeah.
Right. So now that you're clear-headed, I have to assume that playing takes a different dimension.
Playing is so much fun.
Yeah.
I mean, I got it as good as it gets.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
We all do.
Do you find that you earn your things?
We're in a band that's loved, and yeah, the audience knows all the songs, and, you know, I could be moving pianos.
Right. But do you surprise yourself on guitar? I mean, I imagine working with Vince now, you're sort of like, what the fuck? You know, just to get in it with him has got to make you go like, holy fuck, this is something new.
Well, I learned how to do it.
Yeah.
It took a while.
Yeah.
And to not suck, we really have to take care of ourselves. And I hate that. You know?
Well, we're all getting old.
You know, if we were drinking,
yeah,
we wouldn't have to do this stupid show.
No. No, we'd be sleeping.
What we'd time be drinking. Yeah. 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 But.
And no one's getting any younger.
To play.
Yeah.
And to do Eagle songs.
Yeah.
Right. Got to go to the gym.
Yeah.
I don't like that.
Yeah.
I play better if I go to the gym.
Do you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And eat and take care of myself and. Discovering sleep was huge.
Yeah. Sure, man.
Yeah.
Can you do it, the sleep? Can you do it all right?
Yeah.
I don't sleep as much as I used to. I like to. But I sleep.
Yeah. And it's a bitch getting to the shows now.
Yeah.
It's a whole different world. The big scale.
Yeah.
Production and all that.
Well, you're traveling first class. It's comfortable, no?
Yeah.
It's just a lot of hauling around, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's worth it for those 2 hours, 2.5 hours on stage.
Great.
It just is.
For every night.
Come and hear us.
I'd love to, man. So I know that you guys, you've done a lot of, good work philanthropically, I read. So yeah, what are you doing to help, man?
I started a foundation, I don't know, a tax-free deal.
Yeah.
A benefit cause.
Yeah.
Called Vets Aid. I have a lot of buddies that went to Vietnam.
Yeah.
And they didn't get a very good deal.
Yeah.
Starting when they got home.
Right.
It's a forgotten war, but we're still at war.
Yeah.
We are. Sure. We're at war.
Yeah.
The guys that are coming home are shattered. There's been more vet suicides than people that have been killed over there.
Wow.
And I noticed between the coasts, there's this vast wasteland in the middle of the country that's different than L.A.
Mm-hmm.
and New York.
Yeah.
And if you're a vet there, you're all alone. And there are these little communities, little groups of vet-run places that you go to, you know?
Yeah.
And they work without a budget.
Right.
I decided to follow Willie Nelson's lead and start Vets Aid. And this is to help the people I described.
Right, in the communities that don't get help.
In the communities, in the counties, in, you know.
And how does it work? It's a...
Well, last year we did a concert.
Mm-hmm.
And Keith Urban came and Zach Brown and Gary Clark Jr. I asked them and they came and I played and we raised about $500,000.
Yeah.
And that money went to keep all of these organizations going.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're going to, there's a,
people and can we don't have a budget.
Right.
You know?
So you got a.
I got another one coming up.
Oh,
this
great.
This is the second year. We're going to play in Tacoma, Washington, because last year was Virginia.
Uh-huh.
There's a huge military base there, and it's November 11th.
Who's playing?
Chris Stapleton, and James Taylor and me, so far, we help Gold Star families. Those are families where a family member didn't come back.
Right.
Special ops families don't come back. And so we started scholarships for the children to go to school. And there's prosthetic people still waiting for limbs.
Yeah.
We help them, and we have job training for them because it's hard to get a job if you're missing a limb.
Right, right.
But if you have training and you can do something.
That's great.
You know, and on and on and on. Right. And the suicide prevention is the big thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's like when I came into AA.
Yeah.
I'm not all unique and individual and alone.
Yeah.
I'm an alcoholic. Yeah. Well, they got to think I'm not unique and individual and alone. I'm a vet.
Yeah. Let's get them together.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And we invite families to the concert.
Yeah.
And give them seats. Uh-huh. And we invite veterans and handicapped there and give them seats. And all the families get to meet each other and bond. It's a really good thing.
That's great, man.
So that's November 11th.
Is there a website?
Yeah, vetsaid.org.
Great, man. Well, that's O-R-G. Good. That's great you're doing that, Joe.
Yeah.
And it was great talking to you. It's a real honor to meet you. I loved it. Thanks for coming.
You're welcome. Thanks.
We made some headway, didn't we? That was Joe Walsh. If you somehow turned it on and you entered the middle of the conversation, it was great to meet him and talk to him. It was nice. And when we got right when we walked out, he apologized for something, but I can't fucking remember what it was, so I guess it didn't bother me that much. But it was nice. It was like a sober thing. Man, I'm still stuffed up. I'll try to play a little something. Hey folks, this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. You know all those times you've heard guests sneeze on the show? Well, actually, you don't hear any of that because we cut the sneezes out when we're editing. But take my word for it, people definitely sneeze in here, and when they do, I've got a box of Kleenex on the table right in front of them so they can use one and get right back to business. And here's what Kleenex means to me. A tissue that will hold up. We've all used those other tissues that you blow holes right through. When I see Kleenex, I know that tissue is up for the job. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.